Alright, welcome everyone to Radio Free Nintendo episode 86, and we have a special show today because TYP, Michael Cole, is here with me in Colorado. He's hanging out and we've been skiing and playing games and such.
In the flesh!
Yes, he's here in the flesh. That was royally
disturbing,
creepy, dude.
And, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that's a nice intro to the show. So we're happy to have him here, and we have the rest of the gang as well. We've got John Lindemann, our reviews editor. Greg Leahy, our UK correspondent.
Hello there.
And James Jones, our something.
I'm just staff.
Staff. Okay, our staff.
My exactly, title. I am just staff.
Your staff. He might change into a snake if I ask God.
He's like those guys you see in a bar that just wear the staff shirt. That's
Oh man.
No.
Yeah, I should have a couple of those in my closet. Those could be useful. So anyway, new business, and I figured I'd start with our special guest TYP.
Oh, why? Thank you. So. Johnny and I have been skiing quite a bit. There was actually a snowstorm today, so it got pretty windy. I had a gator, which is kind of like a big turtleneck that you could wrap around your face, and Johnny did not.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I'm drinking hot tea right now.
But it was a good time, and the powder was real fresh because it was snowing all day, so that was real good. I guess I'll also talk about some games I played. I was playing Star Tropics on the Virtual Console with Johnny kind of looking over my shoulder.
Well, I had to help him get past one part.
Yeah, I really hate the graveyard. There's this area where you have to go to a graveyard to, what is it, like, retrieve
the fortune teller's crystal ball, yeah.
Fortune teller's crystal ball. And for some reason, that level just always rubbed me the wrong way.
Well, it's really hard, and it's confusing, so.
Yeah. Well, there's one funny thing about Star Tropics is that when I was a kid, I punched in my name as Mike, because that's my name. And so I had no idea that the actual character's name was Mike. I figured it was just placing my name in, you know, in place of generic insert name here. And so we get to the point where you dress up as a girl. And so it says, my name is Mike, Michelle. I'm like, wow, that's really impressive that they did that. Little did I know. So later I found out when I went online and was reading about the game, I realized, oh, this character's Mike. Oh, well.
They did it just for you.
They did it just for me. Let's see. I also played some Star Fox 64. And that was good fun. It's always good to revisit that game. It was just really awesome.
He got me a medal on the hard version of Venom.
Ooh. Yeah, I managed to get a medal on that one, although I failed miserably at most of the other stages, especially Macbeth.
Yeah, you really did. You had epic fail at Macbeth. Macbeth is my favorite level of any video game.
And I've ruined it for you.
And watching you play it, just I almost had to walk away. It was so bad. He was really terrible.
It was pretty bad.
Whereas I play that level and see if I can destroy every single segment of the train, you know, and do all the other stuff. And TYP was like, he couldn't even find the train. At one point he lost the train.
I was really out of my element. I was. I used to be good at that level, but I'm not anymore. Yeah. So that's about all I have. I know there's some stuff that Johnny will talk about, too. So.
Okay, well, I'll go next. Finishing up No More Heroes, I'm currently ranked number 2 assassin in North America. And I got the last sword, which looks like a... I don't know if this is a spoiler. Maybe I shouldn't say. It's kind of less cool than the sword that I had before, but... The attack animations that he gets with his sword are really funny. And let's just say that it kind of looks like a Yoda fighting. Like he's sort of spinning and flipping all over the place and wigging out. Even though the sword itself doesn't look as cool. And I have an update on my eBay auction, which is now over. The one that I pimped last week. And let me tell you, I'm glad that I pimped it because the eventual winner... is a listener of this podcast.
Oh, favors.
And my cards went for $63 all told, which is a very good price, according to what I had asked for some advice on how much should I expect to get for this, and it's a very good price. It's more than I was expecting. So I'm really happy about that, and to the winner, I say to you, good sir, enjoy the WOGs. Last night, TYP and I went to the theater and saw There Will Be Blood, so I thought I'd mention that briefly. It's a cool movie. It's kind of not exactly what I was expecting.
Yeah, not nearly as much violence as I was expecting.
Right, it's not as violent as you would expect from
the
name.
It's creepy.
It's not Rambo. Yeah, and you know, the creepy thing about it is the music. And
it's like dissonant strings.
It's this really oppressive, dissonant music throughout the entire movie, even in places that really, like, the situation of it is not that foreboding or creepy. So it's
right.
There are times when I thought, why are they playing this music at this point in the movie? But the thing is, they play that music throughout.
Hmm. There are one or two points where they have happy music, and it's a really stark contrast.
Yeah. I kind of think that the movie would not be nearly as frightening or as intense without that soundtrack.
Yeah, no, the soundtrack definitely adds to the movie.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, there's some crazy overacting by Daniel Day-Lewis, and a pretty bizarre ending, I think, that I
yeah.
liked. I don't know. I heard that it was a weird ending, but I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. It was entertaining. Anyway, good movie, big Oscar contender. So there's that.
Yeah, I mean, the critics love that movie.
Yeah,
it's been critically acclaimed all over the place.
Sure. Yeah, it's a strange movie. That's for sure. It's about an oil man, and that's what it's about.
Well, it's like an oil man in like 1910.
Yeah,
around
there. Yeah.
He's kind of a small company type, trying to make it big.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Learned a lot about oil wells, I guess, that I didn't know before, especially old ones. And then I have a weird little story. This happened on Friday night. TYP and I went to a party. And afterwards, we came back with a couple of my very drunk friends in the back seat. We ended up going to one of their apartments to hang out for a little while. And the reason that we went there is that this guy has a couple of girls who live a couple doors down from him. And he had called them on the phone and said, hey, do you guys want to do something? So they came over to his place, and we played GoldenEye on his giant LCD projector that projects up on the wall. And so we're playing four-player split-screen GoldenEye with these girls, and there's like six or seven of us in the room. And two things to note, I guess. First off, my quadrant of that screen is bigger than any TV I have ever owned. So it looked pretty. It was pretty easy to tell what was going on.
Yeah.
I didn't. Yeah. So that was weird. And number two, these girls who are my friend's neighbors, they brought over their little brother, who I guess was like spending the weekend with them or something. And this kid's 12. And he's playing GoldenEye. And I start to wonder, like, were you even born when GoldenEye came out?
Cutting it pretty close.
And he said he was like 3 or 4 when it came out. That was just very strange for me to think about.
Wow.
I mean, I played this game in college, you know? I'm still in college, but I played this game when I first started college. Let's put it that way. So it was cool. TYP and I were definitely dominating the other people. We never really played against each other, I don't think.
No, we kind of traded off.
Yeah, we traded off. But we were definitely the gamers in the room, and we totally schooled everybody else in GoldenEye.
I'd forgotten just how fun that was. It's like, I rarely have an occasion to play with two, let alone four players. And, it's just a fun party game, really.
Yeah, it had been a very long time since I played GoldenEye, and, you know, good to know that I didn't lose all my skills, but I too was really kind of surprised at how much fun it still is with four players, and it started to make me really, you know, before, people always talk about, wouldn't it be nice if GoldenEye was on Virtual Console, and I kind of think, yeah, but, you know, that game hasn't aged very well, et cetera, et cetera. I'm kind of now, it's sort of near the top of my wish list for Virtual Console. I would totally download it and start dragging people over. You know, I don't know how much I'd play it by myself, but it absolutely would be worth bringing out four controllers and getting everybody to crowd around. It's still that much fun, so. That's what I've got.
There's one more thing we forgot about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we played a board game the other day.
That's in your other column.
Yeah.
You started a second column of games.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I never played it before. I was the noob. It was Settlers of Catan, or Catan?
Oh,
Catan.
No.
Yeah.
Making its triumphant return to the podcast.
Yes, here we go.
And
Tycho would be proud.
It was a lot of fun. At first, I was pretty intimidated by everything, but got the hang of things, and I actually came surprisingly close for winning because I was kind of blocked off by the longest road ever.
Yeah.
So I was kind of stuck in a corner, and but I was managed to do okay. I didn't win. But. Well,
when we were pulling out all the, I don't own the game, but my friend Kevin does, and we always like to introduce the game to new people, and this happens every single time we do it because people look at all the tiny little pieces that are involved in setting up the game, and they think, "My God, I cannot handle this. It's so complicated looking," and they just think, "There's no way I can do this." And I always tell people, "Relax. It's actually a lot simpler than it looks, and you will do fine." And TYP was really freaking out at first. He's like, "I did it." You know, the first 5 or 10 turns, he's like, "I'm doing so badly," and I'm like, "No, you're not." And sure enough, he actually ended up doing extremely well by the end of it. And the way I describe it to people is it's like rural Monopoly. I don't know. My friend Kevin vehemently disagrees with that comparison. What do you think?
I think it's pretty different from Monopoly.
Really?
I think the idea of kind of harvesting resources is similar, definitely, but you kind of make comparisons to the robber to being in jail.
No, that was a joke.
Okay. All right.
But you get like community chest cards and...
Yeah, I got to purchase them, but yeah, they're like community chests.
Yeah.
I guess they're similarities. I mean, it's a board game.
Yeah. But it's a fun board game. It's the kind of thing that takes a good 2 hours to play, especially if you have 4 people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really fun, and it tends to stay competitive throughout, you know. And then it ends. It's not like Monopoly where you're like bleeding the other players and they just die these slow deaths and it's really not fun by the end of it. Settlers is always fun right up to the end. In fact, it gets more fun the longer you play.
Well, there was like a upset where we figured someone had the longest road for sure, and then another player just sort of swiped it away, and lo and behold, we looked at the board and it's like, wait a second, that guy has nowhere else to build his road.
Right.
So those 2 points were totally gone. And
there was a big reversal of fortune near the end of the game. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. So Tycho would be proud. John Lindemann, tell us about all the nerdy board games you've been playing with your friends.
Well, actually, it's funny that you should bring up that young kid who, you know, you were talking about. He was so young when GoldenEye came out. Over the weekend, I was hanging out with my girlfriend's best friend and her husband, and they have 2 kids. Their son is 8 years old. And, of course, you know, we don't really have, you know, much else to talk about. So, I mean, I know that, you know, that her husband is a big gamer, and of course the first thing that comes to mind, they have a 360, so of course we start talking about Halo 3. And what blew my mind is that this kid is 8 years old, this guy's son is 8 years old, and his first console is an Xbox 360. And so he's sitting there 8 years old talking to me and my buddy about, like, oh yeah, you know, well, what you have to do is you have to hop on the ghost and, you know, press the punch button and knock the guy out. And he's talking about all this Halo 3, you know, strategy. And I was like, when I was 8 years old, I was playing the Atari 2600.
Yeah.
And this kid is right out of the gate.
I was playing DuckTales.
This kid right out of the gate is playing Xbox Live Halo 3 on the 360. And it's blowing. I mean, he's like building stuff in the Forge and all this kind of stuff. And it's one of those things that just blows my mind. It makes me feel old, but at the same time, I'm like, wow. I mean, these kids don't even know how good they have it.
Back in my day. We had 2 bits of entertainment.
did it make you feel like a grandpappy gamer?
I don't know, but, you know, I guess it didn't really make me feel old, but, you know, because, I mean, I'm enjoying that game just like he is, but it just amazes me that what he expects, what he's starting out with, is so far beyond what I ever started out with.
Maybe you should make it your mission to kind of give him the history of games and, like, give him some older stuff that he's never been exposed to.
I don't know. The thing is, I don't know how far I could go back with that.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that if you put a 2600 in front of a kid today, they would just be like, wow, this is absolute crap.
Dude, that happens when you put a 2600 in front of me.
Yeah, but, dude, here's the problem. Yeah. Most 2600 games are awful. 2600
really
was not a good console, okay? It didn't have any good games. I think if you go to NES, if you pick the right NES games, he would probably really dig them. But probably even better strategy would be to start with, say, Xbox One or GameCube and kind of go back from there.
Yeah.
See, rather than start as far back as you can, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think when... I mean, his dad was telling me that when he was probably 3 or 4, they used to play Diablo. So... But isn't that wild, though?
Not, you know? Probably, I mean, not the most appropriate, like, game for a 3-year-old.
No.
Like, you're chopping off people's ears and putting them on your necklace. And
I agree. But you know what? I got to say, devil. If I had a 3-year-old, I'd probably have him playing Halo 3, too. I don't know. You know? I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you're ultimately going to play the games that your parents play, right?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you're not going to – I don't know. Like, how much do you really want to dumb it down for your kid? I mean, a game is a game. I don't know. Especially
Halo is not even really rated M. I mean, it is technically, but it probably doesn't need to be rated M. So
I agree.
That's not a big deal to expose that game to a child.
Mm. Yeah, sci-fi.
Oh, the ESRB is gonna hate us.
Maybe if they asked us to view their footage montages when rating would be a T instead of an M.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I agree totally. Other stuff I've been doing, I've been playing actually a lot of Virtual Console. I think I'm one of the few people on the planet that have never beaten Super Mario 3.
No, and I was actually, one of these
I went
people
down
until
and played that. Well, you know, I went back and played it, and it's interesting. I used to always say that Super Mario World was, you know, absolutely amazing. But I think, you know, the more I play Super Mario 3, the more I realize that Super Mario World is just... it's just a complete rip-off of Super Mario 3.
It's an iteration.
I mean, it's better in some ways, but it's amazing how similar it is to Super Mario 3.
Exactly.
Like I mean, Super Mario 3 is such a leap. I mean, obviously, Super Mario 2 isn't even really, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
If you look at, you know, actually either one, the Japanese or the U.S. one, I mean, Super Mario 3 is so far beyond those, but Super Mario World really doesn't evolve that much past Super Mario 3.
Yeah, it has a dinosaur.
Yeah, it's got
that
Yoshi.
Like the new
and it has longer levels.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that's
true.
Certainly longer.
But that's worth.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of, Super Mario 3 kind of reveals, like, Super Mario World being a launch title. Because sometimes in retrospect, I look at Super Mario World, and, you know, a lot of launch window games these days are kind of shoddy. And you look back at Super Mario World, God, that was so incredible. You know, how did they get that out for launch and bundle it in with the console and things? But when you play through Super Mario 3 and you realise how closely related they are, it kind of seems more feasible that it would have been a launch title.
Yep. Let's see. I volunteered to do the write-up for Lords of Thunder for the TG-16. Or I guess it would be more of a Super CD game. And so I also I grabbed Gate of Thunder, and they're both shoot-em-ups. And Gate of Thunder, I mean, I've only played a very small portion of them. But I got to say, Gate of Thunder is your kind of typical sort of R-type kind of shooter. Both of them, because they're CD titles, they have really, really good music. Yeah. But just my first impression is Lords of Thunder is really, really badass. For a shooter from, like, I think it came out in 93.
Yeah, it did.
For a shooter at that time, I think that would have blown people's minds.
Man.
Because the quality of music is amazing, and the graphics are really, really good.
I think it's widely considered, and I use widely as a relative term among Turbo CD enthusiasts, but I think it's widely considered one of the best Turbo CD games.
Four of the five agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Four of five agree. That's great.
But,
so,
I mean, from what I read...
What made you decide to go ahead and download two? I mean, were you like, well, why buy one when you can get two for twice the price?
Well, actually, I did some research because, I mean, kind of Gate of Thunder and Lords of Thunder are the two, they're kind of held on a pedestal as the two best shoot 'em ups. And it's sort of like, you know, I think Lord of Thunder is probably seen as more graphically impressive, whereas Gate of Thunder is probably better from a gameplay perspective. So I just kind of wanted to have them both just sort of to just kind of bookend the whole thing. I mean, it just seemed, I mean, I just wanted to kind of compare them. And, you know, Lords of Thunder just... I mean, from just playing through the first, you know, little bit of it, it's much more impressive, at least right out of the gate, than Gate of Thunder is. So I'm kind of waiting for Gate of Thunder to, you know, pick up the pace kind of thing.
How many other games do you have to delete to download those
titles? Which, actually, you know, I'm glad you said that, TYP, because it brings me to a completely rant-worthy story that I had as a result of this entire experience.
Ooh. Rant, so, fine, brother.
Okay, all right, so basically, the Virtual Console is absolute crap. I have come to that conclusion.
No.
So what happened? So I'm sitting at home, 8 o'clock tonight. You know, we do the podcast at 9 Eastern. Okay, so I'm like, oh crap! You know, I completely forgot. I had to download Lords of Thunder. So, you know, I boot up my Wii, and I only had, I think, you know, something like 64 blocks. And Lords of Thunder is big. It's like 200 blocks, 214
yeah.
blocks.
Good God.
So, and so, no, yeah, well, the thing is, I think it's all music.
Yeah, it's compressed, anyway, so but it's still a CD game, so it's pretty big.
It's still big. So, you know, I go on to the Wii Shop channel, which I must say, it's just so mind-numbingly slow. I can't believe it.
It is slow.
I don't know what it does. I mean, the only thing I can say is that it must not cache anything on the Wii. It has to load
that's
everything.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah. It's brutal.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
I mean, it's... go ahead.
That's it.
I just...
Greg was just taken aback. You took the words out of his mouth.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is I just couldn't believe how long it took me to actually get in there. So I get in there after taking, you know, after spending, you know, at least 5 minutes actually just getting onto the Wii Shop channel. I go and try to download Lords of Thunder.
Uh-oh!
Only to find out that I don't have enough room.
Oh! Yeah.
At which point I have to back out of the entire thing, then go into the Wii Management console and copy over something onto my SD card to clear some space. All right,
clean
so I'm
out
thinking,
that fridge.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking. Well, you know, there's no point in doing in moving over any of the NES games or any of the SNES games because the NES games are like maybe 12 blocks apiece. Yeah. You know, the SNES games are maybe 35 blocks apiece. So I'm like, okay, I'll move over an N64 game. Now, bear in mind that before I have moved Paper Mario. I moved that over to my SD card, and it took forever and a day. So I decided that I was going to actually time how long. I decided to move over Sin and Punishment.
Ooh.
All right? So I sat there and timed it, and it took 8 minutes. Now, Sin and Punishment is 287 blocks. It took 8 minutes to copy that to my SD card.
I smell an investigative report.
I mean, it was terrible. It just took forever. It is, you know, actually, I have one of the wireless bars that you put on your TV instead of the one that comes with the Wii. Yeah. I just turned that off because I didn't want to waste the juice in it. So. Yeah. And so after doing that, I go back in, you know, probably 20 minutes have gone by at this point. I go back into the Wii Shop channel, download Lords of Thunder. Lords of Thunder goes for probably about 10 minutes and then times out. Something happens. It throws an error.
Nice.
So I have to try again.
I've never
and
heard
then,
of a download timing out.
Yeah, that's
it. It just times out. It gave me. It just threw some error. I don't know what it was, but it was really weird. You know how you have, you know, Mario runs across the screen and it has the three blocks.
In the
did
worst
he die?
Static
did you,
icon
did you,
ever.
That'd be great.
Your
you
download
see, that
fell, would have
been great.
Mitch.
I at least would have appreciated that. But yeah, it just timed out. It was stuck on the first block, and he just kept running across the screen. Forever, and then so that timed out after about 10 minutes.
Woeful.
You hit the minus world.
Exactly. At least that would have entertained me.
The Wii Shop has
so
got
after
to have
that,
the worst status bar ever in the history of computing.
It's pretty lame. I mean, it doesn't tell you anything. So after that, I tried again, and finally that worked. So just to get that one game probably took me about 50 minutes to get that one game.
Jeez.
So
this is a use case scenario for you, Nintendo. If you'd like to use this for future testing, you're welcome to do so.
Yeah, so, you know.
John, they should be paying you $8 for your 50 minutes.
Yeah, it's time's money,
I agree.
Man.
Anybody from Nintendo, you owe me money because you guys wasted an hour of my time that I could have actually spent hyping
a game?
One of your games on
you know,
the
at the very least, they should let you play other VC games while you wait to download or transfer other ones.
Well,
yep.
The transfer.
Why can't you do that shit in the background?
Yeah.
Well, with the transfer, was there a status that told you how far along the transfer was, or was another one of those blind things where you have no idea where and you are at that point?
Oh, it's completely blind. It's just Mario chasing coins running across the screen.
Yeah.
Oh, so I think he's asking about the transfer.
The transfer to the SD
card. I mean, I'm assuming that each block, I'm assuming that, you know, the block on the left is 0%, and the one in the middle is 50, and the one on the end is 100, but who knows?
It's kind of a mess, and if you ever download something that's really big like that, if you have the sound on, it gets really annoying, because one thing I noticed, I was downloading an N64 game one time, and, you know, it takes like 10 or 15 minutes to do this. When Mario finally gets, I think what happens is when it gets up to like 95% or so, he just starts to hit that third block over and over again. But the problem is that last 5% takes 2 or 3 minutes to download, you hear that coin sound nonstop for 3 minutes, and it will drive you insane.
Nice. That's exactly what happened, and I wound up actually turning down the volume on my TV because of it. It was like bling, 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 bling for like a whole minute.
Great.
And I was like, wow, that's not annoying at all. Turn down the volume.
I'm going to put the coin in the back.
So, Virtual Console, I'm flipping you the bird tonight.
You know what this is all making me think of is something that Chris Kohler said on Retronauts, that he found a cockroach under his refrigerator and called it Perrin. just what? You know that the kind of, this oh, kind no. of thing is what breeds that sentiment, you know. Right there.
Yep, so that's all I got, just a whole lot of Virtual Console ranting.
Nice. All right, so Greg, what about you?
Funnily enough, I have been playing Lords of Thunder.
That is funny. Yes,
nice.
It is funny because it means we actually got it at a similar time to you for a start, so something terribly odd afoot there. But in terms of, I didn't have the same difficulties downloading the game at all. I'm kind of pushing it on the storage, but not quite. And it downloaded quite quickly. I was shocked, actually. I don't know whether that's a byproduct.
Ah, the European servers must be new.
Yeah, either that or there's just like less traffic on them or something. It was surprisingly quick. It was quicker than some of the comparably sized games, but even they haven't been that bad. So in that regard, my experience is more favourable, but I'm really pushing up against the storage thing now, and it's going to get irritating very quickly. And as for the game, I would agree. It's impressive stuff, and in terms of for its day, and obviously it's got the sort of screaming metal soundtrack. That's say I'm on CD.
Oh, that's perfect.
You know that from that kind of
which
thing.
Is really. Its soundtrack is. I mean, it's really good. I mean, it's good for now.
Sure.
Like I was really like it's not like I think Gate of Thunder kind of has more of a cheesy soundtrack, but Lords of Thunder it just has a really really good soundtrack.
No, it's got. Although one thing I was a bit miffed about actually was the fact that it seems like sometimes the sound effects are a bit too much. I'd like to change them in the mix because there's a lot of like you collect sort of currency in the game. To sort of buy you upgrades and things as you go, and every time you collect it, it makes a little chime, and that at times can sort of overwhelm the music, which I thought was kind of silly, and with no sound mixer option, that was kind of annoying. But no, in general, I'm.
Are you saying that this shoot 'em up has like RPG elements?
It does have a few elements that are quite unusual, which is one of the reasons why I got it, because I've got a number
I'm
of shooters already.
Three
out of the four TG16 games that I have are shooters, shockingly enough.
Well, that's three out of the four TG16 games. I mean, that's just not you. That just happens.
Yeah. Well,
to
I think that's
TG16.
Just the ratio, 75%.
The other one's China Warrior.
But what happens with it is that, for a start, you don't have a set linear progression of levels. You get to choose which level you...
Like
Mega Man. And you get to choose a suit of armor, which is essentially a weapon set. Well, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, you choose from a world map. You choose, like, a certain, I guess, kind of province to attack or from a world map. And then you choose your armor.
That's right. And really, I suppose, having played... So the good thing about it is you can see a lot of what the game has to offer without going through some brutal, monotonous, rote memorization procedure of beating these levels you've beaten a million times before just for the opportunity to see more of the game's content. So it's a Virtual Console game, even though it is not easy at all, but in that sense, it's kind of more favourable for casual VC play. Because you can just see more without having to sort of put yourself through that kind of rigor that you do with a lot of shoot 'em ups. So that's good, and I've been enjoying it so far. It's been a while since I've had a shooter, and this one's a bit different. Like I said, you collect these coins and you can buy extra health, extra sort of power for your weapons. You can buy extra continues. So you've got a few things in there that's quite cool. And it should, if you think you've completely exhausted shooters on the Virtual Console before, you still might want to look at this because it is different.
Yeah, I also enjoyed the theme, too. I mean, almost every single shooter you play is some sort of sci-fi,
The ship.
Shooting in space kind of thing. But Lords of Thunder is more of kind of like gods versus dragons and sort of stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. It's a really neat change of pace.
So I've been playing a bit of that for a little while, and I'm sort of reaching back a bit more. Our discussion on Smash Brothers last week inspired me to play the N64 Smash Brothers for the first time in a while. And what it really brought back to me was when I first played Melee, I was blown away by the music and the graphics and all that. Obviously, you know, it was when I first got my GameCube, so it was kind of my first taste of the GameCube as well as as well as Melee itself. But I was like, oh, I'm not sure about, you know, the gameplay feels a little different. You know, the grabs and the throws aren't as powerful. I don't know whether I'm going to like it as much. And then I was playing the N64 now, and I was like, this is a joke, right? I couldn't believe there was ever a question in my mind which I'd prefer out of the gameplay stuff.
Well, what always makes me what makes me laugh is the artwork on the N64 game.
Yes, it's very bare bones.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
I mean, there are still there are still things I really like about it that did kind of get lost in Melee. But as an overall, it's like, wow.
Like Pikachu being good. I mean, Kirby being good.
Yeah. And Ness was the big thing, because I really got attuned to Ness on the N64 version, and he was just so different. He just felt different in Melee. I never really got a home with him, but so it was nice in that sense to revisit some of the things I did like. And I still loved it because I have the Japanese version. I still love those sound effects. They were great. They got changed for the American version into like bowling pins or something. But the original ones were sort of very sort of smacky, you know, it's very physical violence-y, which I thought was wonderful. And the proper, sort of, well, not proper, nice. But something quite close to a proper lightsaber sound effect as well. So those, but it kind of brought home to me the fact that, you know, you get so used to things that even when something is an improvement, at first it might not feel that way. And
that's probably how... You probably just foretold a lot of reactions.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking.
Although, I have played Brawl, as you may know, and I think that the differences between Melee and Brawl are much more subtle than N64. And sometimes it's subtle in a bad way, sometimes it's subtle in a good way, but for the most part, you can pick up your controller and start playing one or the other fairly interchangeably, depending on the character. I mean, like, Mario threw me off because he has his water gun instead of his tornado, but, like, Pikachu... Like, actually, I like Pikachu more than in Melee. I found myself playing with Pikachu a lot. But he controls pretty much exactly the same. Maybe the timing's slightly different, but I didn't really notice it that much.
Sure.
Same thing with Luigi. Some of his moves were a little faster, had a slightly different time to actually, you know, you push down B, and maybe it takes a quarter of a second instead of half a second for the attack to initiate.
Hmm.
But, I think that enough of the characters are similar that people can kind of step into Brawl and... not feel like it's too foreign to them.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
Certainly, I've switched back and forth between Melee and N64 because I had friends who only had N64.
Uh-huh.
And that would take like 10 minutes to like change my mindset because things were so different in terms of pacing and everything. But I think that it'll be a smoother transition.
Yeah, sure. I mean, because you could forget how many things were. Obviously, you had the entire extra special move from N64 to Melee. You know, you didn't have you didn't have the four different B moves. You just had three, which obviously is a pretty big difference. And like I said, the grabs is a big like Link's hookshot grab and some of they were so effective. There really aren't that many in Melee. I think they were quite that good.
I can remember in the N64 game, pretty much playing through the entire single player classic mode with Kirby just using his throws.
Yeah.
They were great. Good. There's that one throw where he kind of does like slams you into the ground, and you just kind of like basically fly off into a star.
Yeah, no, it's true. The throws were very, very. That was one of the things that, you know, when going back to when I first got Melee, really hit me. Was like, wow, you know, the throws really don't do that much anymore. I mean, one of the most powerful ones I think in Melee is Peach, actually, weirdly enough, when she slaps you in the face and you go flying. That's
I don't know about you guys, but in Melee, I think of throws as almost like a taunt. Because so useless that they're just kind of like...
Character. Yeah, I mean, some of the characters, they're
mostly,
cool,
though, but they're pretty useless. And I, you know, it's possible to, like, kind of throw someone over the edge, and then you may be able to, like, cheese them off the edge. But mostly, I just use them to humiliate the opponent. It's like, oh, you got too close.
I use throws a fair bit when I play, and definitely with like Zelda, the throw is pretty powerful. So if the damage is high, it's a finishing move.
Right, yeah. That's kind of similar with Peach, like I said. That's because Peach hasn't got a lot of stuff that can get people out. The up smash is quite good, and that one, that's pretty much how she gets them out: up smash and forward throw.
Or she might, if you're really lucky, she might pull out from the ground.
Yeah,
that's. I think I've seen that once.
It's seldom. There's no.
Yeah. Well, anything else, Greg?
No, that's pretty much it on my front.
All right, James, what about you?
All right, so I played a bit more of Zack and Wiki, which isn't quite as sadistic as I was making it out to be last week.
Oh, really?
Still moments
yeah,
because
worse than Ghouls and Ghosts.
You got owned last week.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I can beat Ghouls and Ghosts, and this game was giving me problems. I don't want to hear it.
Well, everybody in the forums was saying you got owned. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, just they're not around saying. Anymore, are they?
Coincidence.
So you got the last round now.
James has fast fingers, but not fast brain.
But what I really played the most this week for review was Miami Knights Singles in the City.
Oh, yeah.
This game is... All right, I'll just tell you now. It's a Sims ripoff. And it... isn't a very good one because it's completely linear and completely and utterly trashy. If you want to do anything in this game, you have to pay somebody an exorbitant amount of money, make them like you, or make them like you so you can pay them an exorbitant amount of money.
Is this sort of a fraternity simulator?
No. This is a...
Touché, Johnny. Touché.
You play as a male or female character who wants to become a celebrity as either an actor, a musician, or a model. And your nosy neighbor who does things like watch you urinate in the morning.
Awesome.
He does. Very first time you meet him, he wakes your passed out ass up, drags you into the bathroom, and stands there while you use it. It's
a fraternity
simulator.
Gritty.
It's really disturbing. But, in fact, he stands there while you shower, too, if I recall correctly. But he just calls you. He just calls you and gives you these objectives, like, go buy a boat. Why would I buy a boat? What does buying a boat have to do with me becoming an actor? I don't understand.
Oh, it's all part of the plan.
You gotta have the image, man.
It gets better.
Come on.
It'll be buy
a
boat.
Total package.
It'll be buy a boat, and then you take the boat out somewhere and do something with it. Pay $2,000 to soup up the boat, and then after you use the boat, your objective is buy a bigger boat. Which you'd have to spend $6,000 souping up to use it, and then the game's over.
That is what it's like living in Miami.
But yeah, apparently it is. But the only ways to earn money are by like 4 or 5 really bad touchscreen games, like wash dishes, DJ, or
does one of them involve giving blowjobs to whoever shows up in the street?
I'll get to the relationship mechanic in a second.
Oh, okay, my bad. I didn't mean to spoil that.
Oh no, because there's some good fun to be had there too.
Well, that's a good euphemism for oral sex, relationship mechanic.
But this is the point in the relationship mechanic where I have to be careful what I say.
Oh,
that's an Onion article.
But there's basically the only way you're going to end up making money is by going to the beauty salon, talking to the manager, and taking a 4-hour stint in the hot tub to make $500. It's the fastest way to make money. But it's
that's
this
how
really,
I do it.
It's this really disturbing process where there's this old guy watching you take a hot tub bath for 4 hours.
Hey, man, it paid for my car.
So how does this vary if you play as a guy? I assume you're playing as a girl.
Your neighbor's a different gender.
What about the guy in the hot tub?
Same thing. Same thing. But the interesting thing is, like, the final objective is you have to get $10,000 to bribe your co-star in a movie.
To do what?
To do what?
To win the game, man. To win the game.
Is that it? But is that
basically, yeah, you pay him the $10,000. Game over. Game's done. You're done. To do this, the only way that was really feasible to do it, which is either spend 5 minutes making 300 by doing waiting tables, or 500 by...
That's pretty realistic.
Yeah, by 500 doing the hot tub in about a minute, was to take the hot tub out 20 times in a row.
Wait, I have a question about this hot tub. Is this... Do you just go in there and sit there and wait for the money to accumulate? Or is there some kind of erotic touchscreen minigame that you have to play while you're sitting in the hot tub?
The guy tells you, and I'm going to quote here as best my memory allows, that's it. Take that button to that hot tub. And then it shows you basically spinning around and you're in your bathing suit. You step into the hot tub. The screen goes black and you're back out of the hot tub with $500 more.
And does the guy tell you, okay, now rub up, now rub down, now rub up?
All I can say
is the only way to earn money that's not interactive, actually.
They edited that part out, John.
I mean, all I can say is that I am...
Damn ESRB.
I mean, I'm already aroused, guys. I don't know about you.
There's two reasons to buy this game. One, you enjoy repetitively making someone get in a hot tub 20 times in a row.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, in game time goes over about 6 days, where you don't have to feed, go to the bathroom, sleep, anything. You can just do this for 6 days straight.
Damn good.
What else do you need?
Or...
It is your bathroom.
Or
you're actually doing all that stuff, but it's while the screen is black.
Yeah. Or if you're particularly sadistic, make pixelated characters that look like they've had their face melted make out. Because essentially in this game, it's supposed to be a Sims with the emphasis on relationship and celebrity, but the celebrity stuff isn't come in until the end. You only get one acting job in the entire game, and that's a scripted event. So it's not like you work your way up the acting tree. It's you do menial labor till you bribe someone to make you a star. But so that leaves the relationship mechanics. Well, those are just terrible. Essentially, they're supposed to react to you based on your stats like kindness, intelligence, which I'll go right now. Kindness you accumulate by giving tips to the guy in the bathroom. That's the only way I've seen to accumulate kindness. It's just like, why do I have to tip?
Is this an airport bathroom? Club?
No, it's a dance club. It's a dance club, but it looks like a there's a stripper pole. Nice. There's a stripper pole. But
that's for the patrons.
Oh, okay. But there's other stats like appearance and things. And one of the most stark moments of the game was I did the makeup mini game to get my appearance up, during which the touchscreen completely spazzed out, and I'm trying to apply makeup on my eye, and the pointer's like way up in the top corner. But
man, I wish I could have seen that on film. That would have been great.
Oh, I wish I could rip the videos from this game and just post them on the site, because I wouldn't have to have written the review at that point. It could have just been the videos. It would tell the story. But you go, and I did this, and then I went and got a hamburger to eat because the character was hungry. Eating the hamburger...
I wonder why.
Eating the hamburger resulted with this quote. Consumed hamburger. You've really let yourself go. Appearance back down to zero.
Oh, the temptations of virtual hamburger.
Wow.
Appearance took a hit, and fitness like knocked down like 20 points. I'm like, it was one damn hamburger.
One hamburger.
What are they putting in these days?
But
this is very realistic, by the way.
But, yeah. Or if you watch,
just jump back in the hot tub and sweat it off.
If you watch TV, your intelligence goes down by 10 points for watching TV for an hour. It's like,
whoa.
Does this TV emit massive radiation? I mean, what's going on?
No, it's got Fox News but, on it.
Maybe you're watching American Idol.
Hey, man, shut up.
But the relationship...
No, I know. I'm just saying, when I watch it, that's
so
how I feel.
The developers... How can they develop this thing? This is like an accurate or maybe not accurate, but like a fun representation of what really goes on to become a celebrity. I mean, what was the mindset in developing these different mechanics? It's clearly not an accident because there are too many of them.
Mindset, it was a cell phone game.
Man, the mindset is building a resume. That's the mindset.
But, you know, as I was saying, the relationship mechanics. The different NPCs are supposed to interact with you based on, you know, what your stats are. So you'll walk up to somebody and the guy who's always calling you on your cell phone will say, this is the person's name. This is what they like. Which the fact this man is omniscient enough to not only know where I'm standing, but every freaking character in Miami's personal traits is frightening enough. And the fact that he gets his jollies by watching me shower makes it equally disturbing. So I have to assume there's some sort of perverse messiah living next door to me. But the game sort of like... it's. All those stats can go right out the
perverse
window.
Perverse messiah. That's the phrase of the show right there.
Because if your character has good appearance stats, anyone and anything will make out with you if you compliment them, make a joke about yourself, and then make a joke about someone else. Bam. Done. They're making out with you.
This shit works for me every time. So are you saying that the kissing is censored out with pixelation?
No. The kissing is not. It's censored out in the fact that...
Oh, you're saying the graphics in general are censored out with pixelation.
Yes. I believe in the review I used the phrase, it looks like every character's face was a G.I. Joe doll with a date with the magnifying glass.
I left that in there because I loved that sentence. I thought it was great.
It really, that's what they look like. If you walk up to somebody, you're like, there's kind of a face there.
But, sort of a G.I. Joe there.
That's hot.
But
man.
You can invite people back to your house, which you think, oh, this is where the game's going to earn its teen rating. No, all you can do is make out with them again, and then they just stand there in your room blankly like morons.
How do you earn a teen rating? what does that involve? Being just, you know?
Oh man! I don't know. Ask Melee.
I think the ESRB people, when they got the video, just felt so dirty watching it. They're just like, "Give it a teen and just call it a day." Anywhere near this game anymore?
Are there any tentacles in this game?
No, there aren't.
Is there anything?
But
man, yeah, that's
is there anything phallic?
Yeah, that's.
Is there any phallic content in this game whatsoever? I don't know.
But you know, the funny thing is, they hype up this relationship mechanic, but you can't really develop a relationship with anybody beyond getting their phone number. Hmm. And you can't.
We're making out.
And you can't go.
We're getting in their hot tub.
And despite the game being utterly sleazy, you can't do anything but make out with them. Mm. It's sort of like they just sort of like threw together some bizarre combination of stupid events and called it a game.
So do you kind of feel cheated? Sort of. You know.
No,
like...
I feel relieved to be done with it.
Okay. Fair enough.
And all in all, it takes about 8 hours, so it's not enough time to be cheated. But I think the fact that I beat the game by taking 20 hot tub baths in a row was enough to make me take a point off the game automatically.
You know what would be really surreal is if you played this game while you actually sat
in Miami, no less. That would be it. That would be
actually,
at night.
I actually toyed with giving the subtitle of this review Hot Tub Sim 2008, but just decided against it.
I think we've already talked about this more than probably any other media outlet ever will. So.
The best part.
Maybe we should cut it off here.
Oh, you sure? Because there was a great email thread going back and forth that ended with Evan Birchfield coming and going, please stop talking about this game.
Yeah.
Well,
next.
Now, Chiron owns that game, right? He owns Miami Knights, doesn't he?
He bought that game.
Chiron bought
Chiron.
It. Yes, for
himself. I love you, but dude. Really.
Actually, there is one saving grace of this song. It's the opening game has this like ringtone music to it throughout the entire game, and it starts with Reel to Reel's rendition of I Like to Move It, Move It, played via cell phone ringtone.
I heard this. It's pretty bad.
It is the most utterly hilarious thing I have ever seen. When the game started up the first time, I actually laughed so hard I dropped the DS onto the bed I was sitting on.
What?
Wait, you played this game in bed?
Did you beat this game in bed by any chance?
You said too much.
What?
Okay.
Let's go on.
That's enough new business, please.
That's the best new business ever, by the way.
I don't know if I can handle any more new business of that type. So, yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with our community interaction. Back for the community segment. James, what is going on with the forums, man?
They're not there.
What?
Are they hiding? Yeah, kind of. Due to reasons beyond our control, we were forced to take the community or the forum down temporarily. We hope to have it back up as soon as possible, but we can't give you a timetable for that because we really don't know exactly what we're going to do yet.
That's not quite true, but we'll have it as soon as possible.
We're working on it, yeah. That's the best way to put it. And this means TalkBack is down, so that's the part of the forum that I usually hang out in, and so this affects all of us, I think.
Mm-hmm. We're all sad.
Yes. I'm sad.
Oh,
no, TYP is sad too, really.
Yeah, more angry than sad, but sad as well.
Well, anyway, we don't have a forums update for you, so we can't make fun of our beloved forum users this week.
Sure, we can.
I don't really think we make fun of people. I think we look for the funniest things in the forums and we talk about them. And some people apparently take offense to that because every week we get these complaints like, you guys are making fun of me.
Come on,
now you're making fun of someone.
Yeah, I guess so.
You can defend, I mean, I don't think people understand that we love our forum users. I mean,
oh God, yeah. I mean, I've been using the forums for like 7 years. I mean, come on.
I mean, I think there's nothing cooler than posting something on the site and having people respond to it and show that they actually read what you write. That's pretty amazing.
I agree.
It's very cool.
I wish I knew that feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, there was, like, my original Phoenix Wright review, like, 6 months after I wrote it or something, there's someone who posted, like, hey, I read your review, I totally got this game, and I love it. It's like, that makes it all worthwhile.
It does.
I mean...
Now, some people on our staff will take talkback way too seriously. And
which is when it comes to its funniest.
That's true, yeah. Some people take it way too seriously, and they use it as some kind of, like, measure of approval from the readership and stuff, and you know I love to read what people write, but you can't do that because it's like less than 1% of people who read the article will say anything about it. Mm-hmm. And usually people are more likely to comment on something negatively than positively. Like if they agree with your review, they're more likely to just let it go. You know, they're probably not going to write anything about it unless it really pissed them off. So it's easy to take things too personally, but that doesn't happen too much. People get over it. But yeah, I mean, I definitely miss TalkBack, and hopefully everything will be back up and running pretty soon. So with that, we're going to move on to our reader mail, and I think John Linneman has the first one.
All right, the first one comes from Sophia, a.k.a. Golden Phoenix, a very famous user in our forums. Hey guys, I am a new listener to the show, and I'm really enjoying it, even after you make fun of me. Sorry.
Which we didn't do. We made fun of her game collection, but not her.
Yeah. I mean, we make fun of Chiron's game collection, so...
You know what? You know. She actually said the other day that she hasn't played most of the games in her collection.
Well, that's
so
good,
why
because
did she buy
really
them?
She should sell them. But go on. Anyway.
Or just not buy them.
Hey! Carry on.
All right, okay. Anyway, I have a question I'd like to bounce off you guys. Do you think it is possible that third parties are selling well for Wii, but that the sales are spread out amongst the myriad of titles on store shelves? As we know, the Wii base is made up of a striking number of casual or non-gamers who may not know any better when picking out a new game. Is it possible that because of this new user base, that the only marketing they go by is the physical box on the shelf? If so, do you have any ideas on how third parties can advertise their games to this crowd?
Pool party.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. Well, I think they already are, and that's why these games are selling well. I mean, obviously, box art is a huge factor for point-of-purchase sales. And the games with strange or interesting box art are doing pretty well. And I think she's very much correct that these games are actually selling well, but they're spread out among so many titles that it's hard to tell in the limited sales data that we get. If you look at something like Carnival Games, I don't think it has ever shown up in the top 10 or maybe even the top 20 games sold each month since it came out, and yet Take-Two has said that it sold like 700,000 copies, and probably even more now that Christmas is over.
Well, the thing is, these games are so cheap to produce as well. I mean, even if a game isn't going to sell, you know, 1 million copies, they're still going to make money off of it just because...
Yeah, it doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Target Terror can probably sell 100 copies and make a profit.
God forbid it sell 100 copies.
Dude, there were 100 people at GAF who responded to my thread who said they would buy it. So if they actually follow through, that game's golden.
Yeah, come on.
Well, the 3D is alive and... 3DO is alive and well, I should say.
Unfortunately. But
anyway, I think it definitely these games are selling well, and if they weren't, the companies wouldn't keep putting them out.
Well, I think one of the things that gets lost in the shuffle sometimes with Nintendo fans here is that they're not used to having a console leader, at least they haven't in, 12 years? But if you look at the PS1 and the PS2's library, it was full of similar games with similar completely unadvertised games with box art that sold just based on people who had a PS2 in their home, but, you know, weren't really gamers. So it's not unheard of or unusual, and I think the same thing happened there. Those games kept getting made because they were selling enough to substantiate making them with their relatively low cost of production. And the fact that these games have almost no advertisement on them just keeps the price down and probably wouldn't increase the number of sales they'd get anyway. Because the people that are normally targeted by game advertising, the people who are easiest to target for game advertising, aren't going to buy these games.
Yeah, and I think one of the strange things is that some of these publishers are trying to promote these games through the PR channel. In other words, they're trying to get us to do coverage on these really crappy casual games.
Competitive eating. And,
and not, you know, they're sending us a lot of press releases about them. It's like, do I really need a press release about Ninja Bread Man? Like,
our forum goers.
What good does that do your company? It probably makes the game look worse. The more people know about these games, the less likely they are to buy them.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty astonished that some of these publishers are using PR as an outlet for the marketing of these games. And, you know, and then they send them, then they send us review copies. I mean, do you really want a review of Miami Nights on our website?
Because we got one now.
You're not going to like it, but we'll give it to you.
Mm-hmm. I hope the PR company
emails us. I just think that's probably
us.
A poor choice. That's a poor use of marketing dollars, mm-hmm. you know, to pay someone to try to get this kind of coverage, because we clearly are not the audience for this, and the people who read our website are not the audience for this. I mean, if you are interested enough, if you have enough of a vested interest to read a website and read reviews, you're already way beyond the target demographic for this stuff.
Yeah.
But the question is, where do you find the people who aren't in that demographic? Because we're the easiest to target when it comes to video games, and we're what these companies have experience with.
Yeah.
I mean, where are you going to advertise Miami Nights? At a hooker convention? I mean, what are you going to do?
I don't know. If you have
a hot tub convention,
if you have a big enough budget, you can do, like, say what Ubisoft did with My Word Coach, which is to run basically infomercials on it. Like traditional TV commercials, not video game commercials, but like, I mean, the commercials for that game look like they're trying to sell you a mop.
Yeah, I mean,
really, they're like targeted towards house
mothers. I think
that's brilliant, but that's an expensive type of marketing. So for less than that, I don't know.
I agree, Johnny. I think that something like My Word Coach, I think that was really brilliantly marketed. I thought they did a really good job because you were hooked into watching the commercial before you even realized that it was for a video game. I thought it was really well done.
Okay, James, I think you have the next question.
Right. This is from our esteemed now staff member, Chiron. I say esteemed. And it starts... And
incestual hate mail is what it is.
Oh, God. Remember to get this email. All right, it started, as you recall from last week's episode, we mocked his video game collection. But his email starts with, I'll have you know that I only own one out of the top 10 worst Wii games, according to manpill.com. Which
vitamin pill? Viagra.com. M-A-N-N. What?
And spelled MANNPILL. Now, I'm not sure we should be proud of him for only owning 10% of the Wii's worst games, but moving on. He points out that bad game only costs $20. So no, his collection is not devoid of taste. Thank you.
Let me.
It's not worth $20.
Okay, before you finish reading this email, let me list off the games real quick that are on this website. This is their list of the 10 worst games.
Now, what game?
Billy the Wizard.
What game does he have? What game does he have?
I think it's Ninja Bread Man.
Okay. It's Ninja Bread Man, I believe.
Good God.
So here are the top 10 worst Wii games according to manpill.com, a place I never heard of before this. We've got Billy the Wizard, Rocket Broomstick Racing.
Yeah, these are all by the same people, I think.
No, that's phallic.
Yeah. Dave Mira BMX Challenge.
I never even heard of that game.
Yeah, needs more tits. Anubis 2. I guess it's the sequel.
Really? I think it's a puzzle game.
Yeah.
The website says they should have called this game Canubis, and it probably would have sold a few more copies.
Well done.
We've got Chicken Shoot, which I think is literally a mini. I think it's like one mini game.
It is.
Yeah, that's pretty infamous.
And in fact, I know for a fact there are forum goers that own and love that game.
Well, wow. I'm very ashamed to say that when I went home for a vacation last summer, and I took my Wii with me, or else my sister had hers. We took it to the beach for the condo, and I went to a GameStop in my hometown. I was looking around. I had some store credit. I wanted to buy a new Wii game. I ended up getting Resident Evil 4 Wii Edition. But as I was looking around, my mom went in the store with me, and she's like looking at all the boxes. This, by the way, this just shows you how influential box art is.
Yeah.
She's judging entirely on the boxes, and she's like, "Oh, we should get Chicken Shoot."
Oh God.
And I'm like, "Mom, no."
you're like Chicken Shit.
Exactly.
Oh, shoot, face in a barrel. Good God.
Oh man, Chicken Shoot. I mean, that's not even a redneck sport.
At least you know what you're getting with the game. Chicken Shoot. You know exactly what's in it.
Well, that's true. All right, we've got Jingo World Tour, which has to be one of the most puzzling subtitles I've ever seen.
But,
why would you go around the world playing Jenga?
Good question.
Is it really different from one country to the next? Are there Jenga groupies who will greet you as you go from one?
I don't know, but I think Wendy wrote a fairly extensive preview for this game based on like E3 coverage.
Yeah,
why?
I've heard it's ass. I think play Jenga underwater. That's genius.
I think Jenga's huge in Germany. I think it is.
Yeah, I love Jenga, but
virtual Jenga.
I don't really need a video game of it.
Jenga.
There's Alvin and the Chipmunks, the movie, the game.
I'm shocked that game.
The movie,
is
the
bad.
Game.
That's always a winner.
The famous Ninja Bread Man, of course.
Yeah.
Mini Desktop Racing. I seem to remember IGN giving this like a zero.
Yeah, something like that.
I think about five of these are like the same people that ported a bunch of really shitty PC games over to the Wii.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just can we? No,
a lot of these are by the same publisher, actually.
Yeah. Well, who's that publisher?
A couple different
Popcorn Arcade or something.
Shovelware.
Like, might be
yeah, and then there's like DSI, which I think is like Destineer Software Interactive or something like that.
Mm.
Okay, the next game is Balls of Fury.
Balls,
which
a movie game.
Probably one of the worst movies of last year. I guess we shouldn't be so surprised that the game is very bad.
Christopher
Walken,
what's happened to you, man?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, really. And then Off-Road Extreme Special Edition.
Mm-hmm. Special Edition.
And so special about it.
I have to say, this game has some of the worst box art I've ever seen. Look it up.
Cool party.
I'll include it in the AAC feed.
Well, it looks like it has the car from the Chevron commercial.
Yeah.
In front of a very generic explosion.
It's completely terrible.
I'll include a picture in the AAC feed for everybody to see.
James, I apologize for the interruption. Please continue with Chiron's hate mail.
Oh, okay. All right, he continues after he informs us that the game only costs $20, therefore it's not bad. In fact, you know what?
That's logic.
I probably get for absolutely. A buck.
You got taken, Chiron. Sorry, dude.
Oh, we're going to get so much hate mail.
I know.
It's all
he hates me already.
He's asking.
In fact, you know what? I'm not the problem. You are the problem.
You, sir, are the problem. And he says bad game in quotation marks, like he's implicitly disputing the fact it's bad. Even
the
before
Ninja Bread Man is bad, yeah.
Okay.
Try to make it through, James. Try to make it through. Fight it.
He's
fight
struggling.
It.
I'm buying.
You can do it.
I'm buying third. I'm never going to get through this letter. I'm buying third-party games. I am enjoying the Wii library. And you know what? Carnival Games is good.
I'm sorry. Good day.
Are you disputing that Carnival Games is good? Or is that the prior podcast?
We mentioned it amongst the list of games these people shouldn't own that they do. And you know what? Carnival Games is good. Golden Phoenix convinced me to buy it. And when I was iffy, and I was very much surprised at it. Far Cry was...
It's a jackpot. Come on.
This is the first person I've heard say anything good about Far Cry.
Yeah, what the hell, man? Surely that's indefensible.
Oh, but keep reading. Keep reading. Go ahead.
I can't.
Yeah, this is all the playoff.
Far Cry was good. I beat that game before I beat Zelda because it was fun, and I didn't want to put it down.
Okay, that's got to be self-parody. At that point, I'm not going to accept that it's anything other than self-parody. Call me a hopeless optimist.
How do we even reply to this?
I don't think we can say anything that would be funnier than his own email.
Well, I hope he takes it with, you know, the grain of salt. I mean, we don't want to attack him, just his taste in games.
He does good work on the site.
I mean, I don't want him to get angry at us about this.
Yeah. I will say that I love Tyron.
You know, he's very proud of himself. That's a good thing. He's proud of who
he makes the site better. That's all I can say. He makes the site much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Just the fact that he has those kind of contrarian opinions, I think, is amazing. It's great. It's so much fun.
Yeah, and, well, you know, if I ever go hang out at Chiron's house, I'm bringing my own games.
You don't play chicken shoot?
You're going to bring
too
like,
interested
some holy
in chicken
water
shoot.
As well. Maybe a crucifix.
you know what?
I'll bring my own landfill.
I'm just
going
to bring a washcloth so I can wash myself off. Those games make me feel dirty.
Far Cry. Gloves for putting them into the disk drive.
All right. Next and final letter. This is from Dave. And Dave writes, "There have been high hopes and speculation that Nintendo Power would become fair and balanced," quote unquote.
Yeah, see, straight away, that's not what you should say.
Yeah, fair and balanced. After its recent sale to an independent third party, that would be Future Publishing, I believe. They also do the official PlayStation magazine.
One of them.
And OXM, official Xbox magazine. however, after reading the newest issue, February, it's easy to see that the magazine is up to its old tricks pimping out terrible games like Destiny's Summer Sports and Konami's Target Terror. Shame on them for trying to shovel more shovelware. Shame on them for trying to shovel more shovelware on the innocent gamers who don't know any better. What's your take on this latest sham?
Well, here's my first thought. Anyone that gets hoodwinked into thinking Target Terror is a AAA title needs to have shame on them, really.
That's not really fair. I mean, what if grandma's reading a ton of power saying, "Oh, what's a good game? We should get little Jimmy." You know, and she doesn't know any better. She doesn't play games. She's not going to know any better. And she probably doesn't even know that this is not an independent source of information and all that. So she's going to go based on what she reads.
Nintendo Power supposedly now is an independent source of information. And I haven't read the new edition of the magazine. I haven't read the magazine in a few years. But from what I've heard, their reviews are becoming pretty
harsh.
They
are, actually.
And, you know... Yeah, I've heard that these bad games are getting bad scores on Nintendo Power, and that has not always been the case. So there's something to be said for that, but it sounds like from Dave's email that they're certainly previewing anything they can get their hands on, and they may not be they may not be terribly critical in their previews like maybe we think they should be. So.
Well, but are the better review scores based on when Nintendo still made the magazine themselves? I think that it's changed very recently, and so now maybe they're starting to review bad games and getting them decent.
Yeah, I mean, I subscribe to it, and you know, I have to say that the review scores are actually very much in tune with what else is out there for any given game. I mean, if a game gets around to set like 6 or 7 kind of range, they'll give it that. They don't just automatically give 8s and 9s out to every single title. So I was actually very surprised by that. Their reviews are actually fairly balanced.
Well, you know, when I saw this email...
As far as their preview coverage... Go ahead, James.
When I saw this email today, I almost went out and tried to procure a copy of the issue just so I could read what they wrote about Target Terror for us and our listeners here. But it doesn't say Target Terror, arcade game that was bad 8 years ago. They're doing a disservice to everyone who reads the article.
Right.
But...
I don't know. I have a couple of comments I can make about Nintendo Power. First... I can specifically remember the point at which they started to put ads in the magazine. And I don't have a huge problem with that, but what I have a problem with is that they didn't reduce the subscription rate when they did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I felt like it's like HBO, you know, I pay for it. Well, I don't actually, but my parents do. My parents pay for HBO so that they don't have to watch commercials on it. The channels with commercials, they don't have to pay for. And I think magazines should be the same way. What the hell else was I going to say? Oh, yeah. I mean, this is really obvious, but Nintendo Power, especially as an official magazine, should have demo discs.
I agree.
And
never gonna happen.
That's a safe, easy, obvious way for Nintendo to distribute demos of games. And you know what? If Nintendo doesn't like to do demos of their own games, fine. You know, I can live without a Mario Kart demo. I'd like to have one, but I'll be okay because I kind of know what to expect from Mario Kart. But let third parties do it.
Hmm.
Supply them with an avenue to do demos. If that's what they want to do in their marketing, give them a way to do that. Because obviously you're not going to allow them to download over the Wii's internet service. There's nowhere to put a demo on the Wii. And there's no other way to do it. Do a demo disc in your official magazine. Duh. This should have happened 10 years ago.
It would have been hard 10 years ago.
8 years ago. No, 7 years ago. Yeah. Okay. 7 years ago with GameCube, it should have happened. And it hasn't, and I think that's why a lot of people like myself, I really don't give a shit about Nintendo Power anymore. You know, a magazine to me is very blasé to begin with, and, you know, in the age of the internet, and the only thing that would really get me interested in buying a magazine about Nintendo is a demo disc, because that magazine is not going to have a whole lot of information that I don't already know.
For the record, I got a free Nintendo Power subscription last year. I think I got 10 of the magazines that I received are still in their original wrapping.
Yeah, I just don't think, I don't know. I have to think, for me and probably a lot of the people who listen to this podcast, there's probably not much in that magazine of interest to us.
Yeah.
There's nothing that you haven't already seen.
Yeah, I mean, the only
earlier.
Thing in here that I usually find is just stuff where it hasn't been announced elsewhere. That Nintendo's actually kept it close to the vest and they decide to announce it in Nintendo Power.
But even there,
that happens occasionally.
Their biggest
that stuff hits the internet really fast.
Yeah, and their biggest recent announcement was that they're going to bring Tales of Symphonia 2 over. But everybody knew that was a foregone conclusion. It sold really well here.
Yeah, and I've heard that sequel, at least the Japanese version, is not very good.
No.
Well, yeah, to give you guys, I'm looking right now at the February 2008 issue, and just to give you an idea of
Rita's a Target Terror.
I mean, well, actually, yeah. There's no actually there's.
Give us
Target
a scoop,
Terror
John.
Amazingly isn't in there. So if this is a scoop, so be it. But I'm just looking at, just to give you an idea of their review scores. Advance Wars Days of Ruin, they gave it an 8.5. One Piece Unlimited Adventure, they gave a 6.5. Endless Ocean, they gave that a 7.5. Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games for the DS, they gave a 7.5. Professor Layton and the Curious Village, they gave an 8.5. Nano Stray 2, they gave a 6. Nitro Bike, they get. Listen to this.
Ouch.
Nitro Bike, they gave it a 3.5.
That sounds about in line with that review I read.
Bomberland Touch 2 for the DS, they gave it a 6. Sonic Riders Zero Gravity, they gave it a 7.
That sounds kind of generous.
But you know,
I'm a little worried about about this Nano Stray thing, because I was looking forward to that.
Yeah, that
but
seemed
you know,
really cool for shooter fans.
Yeah.
I used to get the party press back in middle school, and back then, there was never anything below a 7. It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sakes, they gave, like, Idean Chronicles a 6. And I just remember, they hyped that game to no end, and that magazine is singularly responsible for me buying Idean Chronicles. Which is also the moment
still
I canceled it. But they gave it a 6, and I remember just cutting that part of the article out and throwing it in the trash can. Just catharsis. I'm like, this game does not deserve a 6.
One thing I would say is, aside from the sort of review issue, though, and official magazines and stuff, I think it would more likely be a problem of just the kind of leniency bias that's pretty pervasive in preview coverage. And you know, that's not necessarily something unique to a particular sort of, you know, publications that are in the tank for a certain format. I think a lot of outlets and things are too kind of benefit of the doubt kind of thing with preview coverage. And it's really not helped by the fact that, did you hear about the fact that basically sort of, was it EGM got like blackballed by Ubisoft because its preview coverage of Assassin's Creed was not that favourable?
Wow.
Yeah, EGM has taken a policy of being more critical in previews, and I don't have a lot to do with the preview coverage here at the site, but I support that. I think they're very, very brave to do that, but it's very much against the traditional sense of what previews should be like. And it's very much against the expectations of the PR and the publishers and the developers who are helping to provide these previews.
Yeah.
And that, and therein lies the problem, because previews in particular are the one kind of coverage that you really can't get in any, in any good quality sense without cooperation from the publisher. And if they are expecting you, because everyone else does it, to just gloss over this game and say, well, hopefully it'll turn out well, you know. Mm-hmm. It may have this problem or that problem, but it's got a long ways to go, blah, 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 and you just do everything benefit for the doubt. And if you're the one publication that's like, no, we're not going to do that anymore, we're going to say how it is, you're going to get a lot of shit from that publisher. And that's exactly what's happened to EGM. And it's
well, and the game,
worse.
Well, you know, the thing is, the game industry is very different from other industries. Like, I mean, people try to compare it to the film industry, but really in the film industry, you only, I mean, previews really don't do you any good. There's no such thing in the film industry. You can either see it, you know, you see the film in its finished form. So it's not like they could, you know, put out a preview version of the new Indiana Jones movie. It wouldn't happen. So the game industry is very, it's, you know, I'm not too sure. I've always wondered about that, like, really how the game industry should actually tackle that. Because on the one hand, you know, you want to get that preview coverage, but on the other hand, you really don't want to kind of set yourself up to be a puppet of a publisher and just say, you know, we want you to write a piece, like a fluff piece on this game. You don't really want to be put out like that. So...
well, you know,
yeah, I can remember specifically one case where Dan Bloodworth, I'm not going to mention the publisher or the game, but Dan Bloodworth went to a press event, played several games from this one publisher. One of them he wrote about and had mostly good things to say about it. You know, this was a game that turned out fine. It was a successful game, and Dan wrote impressions of it. Not even a preview. Our previews are factual. Well, that's, you know, that's why we separate out into hands-on impressions. So his impressions of this game were mostly very positive. He liked the game. I called him and I said, what'd you think? He said, oh, I like it. But he had like one or two comments that, you know, he didn't like a certain aspect of the graphics, and there was something in the controls maybe that kind of frustrated him. And I got phone calls from the PR saying, you know, we really were, you know, the developers were really offended by his impressions or something. I'm like, you realize he enjoyed the game. He's looking forward to it. I think that, but it's a difference of how we look at things and how the readers look at things and how the PR looks at it. Because from my perspective, it was overall a glowing, not glowing, but you can't be glowing when you've only played a partial version, but it was a positive article. And this is actually his opinion, not just facts. This is his opinion.
Yeah.
He liked the game. And that is the gist of it that I got out. That was the overall effect of it. Whereas the PR is going through there and combing for anything negative. And that's what they see, and they ignore everything else. And you see the same thing from reviews.
Well, you know, you can still do a lot of damage with a preview and both ways. And I'm reminded of an instance in the other game magazine I subscribed to, Game Informer, where they did a cover story on the Xbox game Azeric. And it was really good. They really hyped up the game, thought it was going to be, you know, a big title. It was going to do a lot of things. And the game turned out to be such a steaming pile. They had to write an editorial apologizing, because people were writing them letters saying, we bought this game before your issue that had the review came out based on your preview that was so good, and it's horrible. And they actually wrote an editorial apologizing to their readers, saying, we really had... you know, it's common practice to give games the benefit of the doubt in the preview, and we really had no idea it was going to wind up being this abysmal.
The problem is, they probably did have an idea, and because they didn't want to damage the relationship, they couldn't say so.
Yeah, it's this hypersensitivity.
That's the truth of it. They probably could tell that it was not going to be good.
The hypersensitivity of the publisher seems to just make people... and then, of course, even that scenario on the other side, where you end up offending your readership by appearing to sort of be peddling disinformation... It means that it's primarily leniency, but it's also just a kind of centrality bias. It's just that, well... just play it down the middle of the road and keep it as factual as possible. Really.
Well, I mean, I think that journalism still is really in its infancy, and I think that all of this kind of stuff is sort of coming to a head. You know, with Gerstmann Gate and all that kind of GameSpot stuff, all that kind of stuff, it's all coming to a head, and it boils down to: do you want game journalists to be puppets of game publishers, or do you want them to actually honestly critique what game publishers put out? It's a big difference.
Well, I
which one do you think the publishers
want? I know what they want. They want their games hyped. They don't care.
But one might think that they might actually appreciate feedback from people that are playing early demos.
Not if they're playing.
Of course, they would prefer that feedback would be left unpublished, but just said to them, possibly.
Well, not that
the developers like the feedback. The publishers don't care either.
Exactly,
that's true. Yeah. The developers, would want the feedback. Sorry.
All right. So, I think that we need to bring up Dennis Dyack here in this discussion.
Yes, we do.
I feel that the spirit of
Dennis
is kind of
indeed.
Hovering around Johnny right now.
this game is good. You don't understand.
No. I'm not talking about that.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about his point that there's a tendency to show games fairly early
on. Too human.
And
yes.
And if the game isn't good, the publisher takes a risk of getting negative feedback, and then they're all having to attack these journalists because saying, why do you write this bad stuff? If they genuinely believe that it's early, there are kinks, and they're worried about it, delay it when you show it. Just show some screenshots. And
right.
I think we're seeing Nintendo do that more, honestly.
Yeah, Nintendo is tending to kind of wait until later in the process to show their stuff. And they claim it's because they're afraid of people stealing their ideas.
Yeah.
And that is a concern, I'm sure, but...
Well, look at Mario Kart. Mario Kart's coming out in Japan in, what, March? And nobody's played the thing.
Exactly.
I mean, has anybody even seen
it? Well, anyway, I think we've gone too far down the rabbit hole here, and we should probably move on with the show. We do have one more segment. I think it'll be a short one. So thanks, Dave, for that email. Obviously, fascinating stuff. And, we've been getting great letters. So please send your letters with your controversial topics to RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com, and we'll be back in a minute. We're back for our third and final segment. This will be a short one. I wanted to do a little bit of news this week, so we're going to start off with VC games. We actually had some good stuff this week.
Woohoo!
We'll start off with Harvest Moon for the Super NES.
Mm. Yeah. I like this game.
This is the farming simulation that everyone makes fun of until they play it, and then they can't quit playing it. I think of it as the precursor to Animal Crossing.
This is the original Harvest Moon game. Not that it makes any difference.
Yeah, this is the original for Super Nintendo, and as you say, it really doesn't matter which one they put out. They're all pretty much the same. But it's a good game, very addictive, and I know Evan's a big fan of it. He wrote up the recommendation for it.
So if you've never played Harvest Moon before, I assume it's a good pick. If you've played, say, the GameCube, or one of the two GameCube Harvest Moons,
it's probably redundant.
Yeah, okay.
But it is a good game, and if you've always avoided Harvest Moon, now you can get one for $8, and you'll probably play it for a very long time. So
yeah.
It seems like a good value. And again, it sounds boring. It's about farming. I mean, you pick carrots in this game, but there's something really strangely addictive and satisfying about it.
They really ought to put that on the box. Feeling. You pick carrots in this game. Jonathan Metz, Nintendo World Report.
In this game, we pick carrots.
Jonathan's giving the PR reps all
Best
sorts of good stuff.
Ever.
Yep.
All right, and the other game this week, we've already talked about it quite a bit, Lords of Thunder Turbo CD.
Lord.
What's it called? What's the name?
Lords of Thunder.
That was beautiful. Was that in tandem?
Maybe.
Sort of, yeah.
Make sure it is in the editing, James.
I'm gonna vomit.
Sounded like that to me. Oh, God. Okay, that's 800 points as well, and this is, I would say, one of the better weeks of 2008 so far for Virtual Console.
At least there's two games instead of one.
Yeah. I was talking to 2IP about this today, and I think their new strategy with Virtual Console is two-pronged. First, reduce the number of games every week from 3 to 2 so that there's less competition among the games that come out every week. Because I bet some of the publishers were kind of complaining last year because they were releasing games so fast that a lot of games really didn't get the exposure. And they were easily kind of overshadowed by other games.
Operation Wolf.
Games. Operation Wolf, yeah. I don't know about that. So I think it's a combination of that, and I think... we'll have to get a little more data to prove out this theory, but I think Nintendo may have a new policy of releasing first-party games by themselves so that they don't totally cannibalize the sales of something else released the same week.
Right. So what has been released by itself? That's Nintendo? I know 1080.
1080.
Have there been any
it
others?
Seems like there was another one before that, even.
Well, there was like a Christmas special or something 2 years ago.
Yeah, well, 2 years ago, they released 4 games, and one of them was Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Does anybody remember what the other 3 were?
Something else. So.
And I don't think those sold very well. I mean,
surprise.
Because everybody spent their money that week on Mario.
Not me.
So I bet you're going to see Nintendo, especially with high-profile first-party games, that they pretty much all are. I think you're going to see Nintendo releasing their games. Those will be the weeks where we only get one game. And that's not because they hate us. I think it's because they're getting a lot of complaints from other publishers.
I mean, do you think that they're dialing back a bit in anticipation of WiiWare as well? Because that's going to change things a bit.
It could be. That'll be very interesting to see how they balance out. I have a feeling WiiWare titles will debut on a different day of the week.
Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, we still don't really know much about WiiWare.
No.
We don't really know what the games will cost. Yeah. We don't know how big the files will be. And it's going to be very interesting.
They may be waiting until they have a solution with the SD cards, frankly.
Well, we do know that one game is going to... We do know that the Final Fantasy game will be 1,500 points, I thought. At least
that's
be,
in Japan.
In Japan.
So,
but, I mean, that should at least give us a gauge of what we're going to be looking at in terms of price.
Well, I don't know, because that game in particular seems kind of larger than a lot of the other games that have been
announced.
It's
pretty high profile.
Yeah, some of them must be smaller than that, I would have thought.
Online Dr. Mario, that shit ain't worth $15 to me.
No, that should
it
be
might
definitely
be somebody.
Sub
1, I mean, Chicken Shoot's worth $20.
That should be free, because I hate Dr. Mario.
Well, actually, that's a good question. I wonder if they will put up like an initial offering of WiiWare, like something first party, and make it free just to kind of expose the service to everyone.
Mm.
But they kind of already did that with, don't they classify the browser as WiiWare?
Yeah, but that's not a game.
Yeah.
They'll have to have some sort of, they'll need some sort of big launch title for it.
Sure.
I think the Final Fantasy game will be the launch game for WiiWare. Because it's pretty close to launch in Japan, coming out soon. I thought it was March.
It is March, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the game they launch it with in all regions, because you can't get much more high profile than saying Final Fantasy.
True. I mean, unless they have something under, like hidden up their sleeves that we don't even know about, they might just pull out on
they
us.
They do. They do.
A Wario Land for WiiWare would be awesome, but it's not
2D Metroid. Master, anyone?
Master of Disguise 2.
Let the hate
don't
flow.
Explode, please.
You.
That's the spaghetti talking. So anyway, that's Virtual Console for this week. Pretty good week. Let's hope it continues and we don't... Last week we didn't even talk about Virtual Console on the show because it was so bad.
I don't even remember
and
what
I will
was.
Continue that policy, so...
Lords of Thunder.
I just like
amazing.
To say it.
You just like, all right. Like the sound of it.
So the only news story I had picked out from this week, you guys can chime in if you know of anything else really worth talking about, but there's something today, and one of you guys should talk about this. You guys know more about it than I do.
I'll take care of it.
Okay.
All right. Do you have the article open? Because I don't remember exactly where it took place.
No, I don't remember.
But essentially...
Like, attached to this.
No, I don't have it.
Okay, open. Essentially, an elementary school student brought an airsoft handgun that looked like a regular pistol to school and held up a classmate. And you're wondering why we're talking about this. Well, he held up his classmate for Pokemon the Trading Card Game cards.
Which, I'm a little impressed that people still play that. I don't know.
Young kids as well.
Well, I guess Gabe on Penny Arcade is like way into it because he keeps posting about it.
It was just like the most bizarre news story I've read in any recent history of just using a gun to rob someone for
these
Pokemon trading cards.
Getting totally out of control.
And, nice. You know, the official line from the school division is that it's a standard policy about bringing weapons to school, and, you know, I'm sure there'll be...
That's not a weapon, though. It shoots foam pellets.
It doesn't have to be a
That's
weapon,
That's like a
man.
Nerf gun.
Dude, back when I was in school, you could get in trouble for bringing, a bread knife to school. It didn't matter.
Well, yeah. Okay.
This was apparently in Redwood City, California. Actually, I'll read it right here. A 10-year-old boy was sent to juvenile hall after holding a foam pellet gun to a classmate's head and robbing him of his Pokemon trading cards. No one was injured in yesterday's incident. Redwood City police say the fourth grader brought an airsoft gun to Roosevelt Elementary School and held it to a six-year-old's forehead, demanding that the younger child give up the trading cards. The fourth grader has been suspended. School officials are considering whether to expel him.
So holding a foam gun to someone's head will hurt them, probably.
If you shot them point blank.
That's what it sounds like, according to the article.
I was just thinking, I'd really like to see a transcript of this incident.
I mean, I called it a foam jacking. That's how I refer to it. I said it was a foam jacking.
Your Pokemon, give them to me.
Yeah. I've already said, you know, on Kotaku, they had the sort of classic promotional art of Clint Eastwood as Dirty Harry Callahan with the Magnum. You know, sort of saying, go ahead, show me your Pokemans. You know, I just thought it was classic.
Nicely done.
Nice.
That's good.
Just that crap.
Wow, Greg, wow.
Yeah, and I have to say, I was somewhat offended today when I got an email from John Lindemann insinuating that I would be the expert on this story because I play Magic.
I would think so. I mean, if anybody...
Besides, he doesn't play regular Magic anymore. He plays digital Magic
now. I play
now.
Fake virtual Magic. Yeah,
I mean, exactly. I mean, come on.
That way he can't be held up in another elementary school.
I mean, Johnny, really, if anybody is going to get jacked with a foam handgun for some sort of trading cards, it's going to be you. You know, you're throwing yourself out there.
That's too much of a liability. That's why he's selling all of his regular cards.
That's exactly why I wear a helmet.
You're just getting out of the game, man. I can understand that. I respect that.
You're a life man.
Once too much
in,
heat for
in.
Me, man.
In by the cards, out by the cards, man.
Yeah. I can't wait to get my airsoft gun and come and jack you for you. Where's the coast stuff?
To be fair, now let's look at this. He's already admitted to how much they're worth on the eBay auction on this podcast. So he is incentivizing people to jack those things right up.
And by the way, we can make you the expert because you are Wizard of the Coast Mets.
Yes, Wizard
of the Coast did used to make the Pokemon cards.
That's true, yeah. I think they were kind of designed by the same person. But
Johnny Mets?
I've never actually...
What?
Richard Garfield is the guy who designed
He knows his name.
Yeah, because his name is, like, printed on the card.
Oh, Johnny.
Like, every card, I think it's on every single card. But, yeah, it's...
You only know that because you haven't been signed by that dude, so...
No, I've never met him. But I've never played the Pokemon card game, but what I've heard is that it's actually very similar to Magic, but it's sort of like a dumbed-down, simplified version of Magic. So, it's like the kids' version. I'm not interested in that. I play grown-up Magic.
It's called Magic.
Yes, it's called Magic.
I do know the game has a mechanic, has like an evolution mechanic where you have to play the base version of the Pokemon, then you have to play a card that's its evolved form, and if you want to evolve it again, you have to do that. And I just remember thinking that would be really tedious because
it does seem so. Because
it would take you like four turns to get to do anything with it.
So what are you saying, James?
Sounds like Catan.
So you're saying you have... Sounds like you know quite a bit about this Pokemon trading card game.
I'm saying that he must have jacked these cards so he could get his Squirtle evolution on.
Squirtle!
Do you think there's a chance that he did this and then discovered that it was actually one of those counterfeit decks that's still floating around from like 7 years ago when it was a massive money spinner?
Oh, that would be epic.
Well, you know, this actually reminds me of, I don't know if you guys have ever read these, but Jeff Shirley is sort of our dumping ground for Yu-Gi-Oh! Games.
Oh. I think it's just a dumping
Yu-Gi-Oh!
Ground.
Is like, yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! Well, yeah, in general, but Yu-Gi-Oh! Is something to be dumped.
See, part of the problem with Yu-Gi-Oh! Is that if you watch the show, I'm not saying I do, but it seems like they invent the rules as they go along. Ask the community to come up with some qualification or new caveat to the rules that allows the main character to win.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've heard that the rules in Yu-Gi-Oh! Are incredibly complicated, like totally arcane and bizarre.
Probably because they're trying to watch all the episodes and integrate all of these rules.
I don't know, but I know Jeff at one point, like, totally shut himself off. He's like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not playing anymore.
Broken.
Because he was basically forced to learn how to play it. And so now, I mean, we do have someone on, at least one person on the staff who knows how to play Yu-Gi-Oh!, but he would prefer that he didn't know. But it just made me think of that anyway. The Yu-Gi-Oh! Games are pretty much... And the funny thing is, I think the last couple of Yu-Gi-Oh! Games that we reviewed for the site, I remember editing these reviews, and one of the big complaints was that there's no tutorial. And yet the instruction manual is like 80 pages long because it has all the rules in it.
Nice.
But there's no tutorial.
Wow.
Duh.
Wow.
Anyway. So there's that. That's our news for the week. That's the only thing important that happened in the world.
Now you know the news.
And knowing is half the battle.
The more you know. What?
Yep. So that's the show. We did clock it in under 2 hours this week.
Yay!
I'm proud of that. I'm not worried about long podcasts, but I don't want them to be consistently long, you know. And we didn't really have the brawl discussion this week, so.
Oh, well, it's not too late, Johnny.
We'll get it down to a reasonable discussion. Yes, I know you could talk about it. Anyway, that's the show, everyone, and thanks for listening. Remember, you can email us at rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Unfortunately, you can't post in the talkback for this article, at least.
Aww.
I don't think you'll be able to quite yet. Please use that email and let us know what you think of the episode. Give us a question if you have one, and we love to see that stuff.
And let the hate mail flow.
That, too. We like that, too. And, subscribe on iTunes and all that jazz, and enjoy your enhanced AAC format, thanks to James. He figured out how to do that on non-Apple software, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Slideshow assembler, baby.
Okay. So there's that, and I think that's the end of our show. Thanks, TYP, for being here tonight, and thank you, guys. James, John, and Greg, as always.
Mm-hmm.
My pleasure.
Wonderful job. Very nice. Very nice. This podcast was not boring.
Yeah.
Oh, God. See, the problem with TYP and I being here physically together is that we've had, for the past two or three days, we've been doing all these inside jokes, and now we can't contain them, but I'm just not sure how much sense they'll make on the podcast.
Well, it will not make sense!
Well, that one's pretty funny. Okay. That one seemed boring.
Yeah, but the context of it is a little different.
It's pretty funny.
So, anyway... I'm not going to explain it. Anyway, thanks for coming, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Blade.
Yeah?
Shiggity.
Huh?
Hey, Blade.
What?
Shiggity, shiggity,
shiggity. Shiggity, shiggity, shwa. Okay.
Guess what, idiot?
What?
I got new game today.
Oh, I want to play.
Guess what it's called?
I don't know.
It's called Mario Twins.
They look the same.
They look so gosh dang the same.